Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast covers everything tech. The hottest mobile phones, tablets, games. We review it, rate it, test it. Whether you're Microsoft or Apple, Android or iPhone, we'll give it to you
again and again.
Black and white. The Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast.
Welcome to Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Charney.
And I'm Shane Orthrup.
Today, we're going to talk about five ways technology can help you in emergency, something called the Cell Robot, and Tesla by SolarCity. So we're just going to jump straight into it. And five ways technology can help you in an emergency. Now, this particular story kind of revolves around the Italian earthquake. It was a 6.2 magnitude earthquake. And had 241 people die. So this is kind of, we're talking about the rescue efforts. The number one thing was the Italian Red Cross has asked people to disable their Wi-Fi passwords so it can be accessed local networks to coordinate rescue efforts. Now, see, this is the part where you're going to have to decide against your personal privacy versus helping people. I know the first time I read this, I had the kind of warning bell go off because for the last... at least decade, you hear everybody tell you always have a password on. The organization posted a step-by-step guide for businesses and individuals on how to make their internet connection accessible to anyone. What do you think, Jay?
I don't know. That's really interesting. You know, like, I'm sure if you're in some sort of survival situation like that and you need to be found, I think the last thing on my mind would be, oh, let me just turn off the privacy on my... cell phone.
I would never have thought of turning off the password to my router. Matter of fact, I might have a hard time at emergency remembering what the heck it is.
Right. Like the last thing that I'm concerned about is my internet connection.
But it does make sense, especially depending on how bad the earthquake is, for example, you wouldn't have cell phone towers. There's a chance, especially if you have like, say, Comcast and their underground cables, that the cables didn't get cut.
You know what is really interesting, too? I'm glad you brought that up. One of the things that Xfinity has, so Xfinity, if you have Xfinity, and I know I gripe on Xfinity all the time, but this is actually something cool Xfinity does. There are hotspots usually in every city. So
any city, pretty much anybody who has a factory Comcast router.
Right. There are a lot of Xfinity hotspots just all over the place. So like, I can usually connect to the internet and almost everywhere I'm at just because there's an Xfinity hotspot around.
Exactly.
So that could be like another thing that could possibly be used to help save people is maybe Xfinity could be used for good instead of evil.
Another one, and this one I actually think is cool, Airbnb. Airbnb is, how do you describe it? The best way to describe it is you can rent people's homes, for example.
Yeah, Airbnb is pretty cool. You can actually, like, some people set up entire houses just for Airbnb. Like, some people who live out of state or live a couple doors down, like, will buy homes just to put up on Airbnb to make a little bit of money.
Now, with Airbnb, this little buyer beware type of thing, you always pay attention to houses and where you're going to buy it or rent it, for example. But this one is cool. Airbnb has canceled all services charged after those affected by the disaster, allowing hosts to offer free accommodations for victims until September 11th, 2016. Now, this is particularly talking about an earthquake in Italy, but if it was in New York, Boston, probably Sacramento, you could totally see this happening. Now, more in rural areas, you probably wouldn't get as much. It'd be more like in my neck of the woods, it would be the local fairgrounds, local high schools, example.
One of the cool things about Airbnb, too, just a little bit of a sidebar, is a lot of filmmakers use Airbnb for locations.
Really?
Yeah, no, a lot of my filmmaker buddies, including myself, I've done it too, you rent out the place for the weekend, use it for a location, and you just let them know, like, we're using this for a film location, and then don't mess anything up, you know?
Hey, that's pretty smart, actually.
Yeah, keep that in mind for your own stuff.
Now, according to this article, more than 1,000 people have been displaced by quakes, according to the Italian Civil Protection Agency. So this is a great way to temporarily house people. The other one is a Facebook safety check. Now, this recently came into everybody's Facebook feeds during – it was some sort of disaster,
yes,
or it was a terrorist attack. It just happened recently where we found out about this.
There was the Louisiana floods.
Did that happen there too?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was a thing in the old – because everyone was letting everyone know that they were okay using Facebook, and I think Facebook was like verifying that.
Now, Facebook activated its safety check feature following the earthquake on Wednesday, allowing its users to let their friends and loved ones know they are safe.
Yeah, that definitely happened, because one of our guys from the studio is from Louisiana, and he was getting notifications from the Facebook safety check on his friends being okay in the Louisiana floodings.
Now, this is cool, considering how many people worldwide use Facebook. This is a great feature. Matter of fact, I think this is cooler than Airbnb, honestly, because this is a great way for everybody to know their loved ones are safe.
I mean, this is great because, it really helps with like body count and stuff too. Like, and that sounds really messed up, but like, it's really good to help see, okay, so how many people have survived this, and using Facebook and technology in a way to help with figuring out the numbers.
Now, the other thing is I'm really curious about is, do relief agencies like Red Cross have a way to actually look at this? Does Facebook give them a backdoor or some sort of portal where they can see, okay, we've had, say, 1,000 people in the East Ward alive? So you have a basic idea of stuff. Doing that, maybe you can actually see their Facebook feed, and maybe they can say, I need help. Who can they target that they can save?
That would be really cool. That would be a really cool integrative.
And it's very possible. I mean, the only thing I could think of is privacy settings, but my first thought is what they should do is, if you activate it, it temporarily disables that privacy setting. Or say you can say this is an emergency and it makes it public automatically.
Right.
And the other one, and this is not uncommon, this has pretty much happened in all the major disasters recently, as text donations. The relief agencies, such as the Italian Red Cross, is also asking people to donate money through text messages. The system allows people to text a code to a specific charity number. Their donations will be added to their next phone bill. The only thing, and this is kind of my tinfoil hat coming in, is know the charity. Don't donate just to donate to anybody. Red Cross is a very recognizable organization. If there's a bunch of them and you don't trust them, Red Cross. They've been around for like 100 years or more.
Red Cross is definitely a good place to donate.
So that's generally, you know, just be careful. The other one is several U.S. cell carriers, including AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, are offering free texts and calls between the U.S. and elderly, so families can check their relatives in the area. Same thing would apply. I guarantee AT&T, T-Mobile, and whoever else is around there would allow you to have free calls and text. I know the iPhone particularly has emergencies, so what you can do, say if you find an iPhone, if you don't know how to actually access it, it will let you do emergency calls.
That's really cool. Yeah, no, that is a thing on Android as well. There's the emergency call thing where you can make a list of people you want to contact in case of an emergency, and you can make emergency calls to your local emergency relief.
Now, do you know anything about how that Facebook thing works? Because I'm thinking if there's a way you could check into something, you know, say when I'm at a local theater, I always check in just to tell people, say, hey, I'm watching such and such movie. So maybe you can check into an emergency shelter and do that and let all your friends know, hey, this is how you can get a hold of me, or this is where I am.
Gotcha.
I want to know more about that, and I'm going to have to see if I can find more, because it's happened recently. It's been happening every time there's some sort of major happening. I think it happened in some sort of terrorist event. I don't remember enough. I just remember this recently, within the last year, is the first time I heard about it. Now, the next story I have is a little bit on the ridiculous, but I figured we need a tad bit of lightening up. You know, personally, I don't have any tattoos, nor do I really want to get any, but if the time ever came around where I wanted to, there's an interesting new way to do it. Now, the robot needs a 3D scan of the skin area it's working on. Since no part of the human body is perfectly flat, an artist creates the design using software. There's a demonstration video that shows a robot creating a perfect spiral on a willing victim. I mean, volunteer. And by the way, this is from the article, because I couldn't make this up. So there's a solid argument that the machine could be better for intricate designs or those freehand artists might find difficult. So basically, it's a little robot with a needle, and it just kind of goes over the area. Now, what I didn't see, at least not that I remember, was it pre-programmed or was this freehand? You know, was it like one of those stencil things your kid where it just spins in circles?
Well, it's definitely pre-programmed. So like he said, like it said in the article, the artist sketches something out and then the robot does it.
So basically it's if your tattoo artist has shaky hands?
Yeah, it just it doesn't seem like a very good idea to me. I have a tattoo, and part of the whole experience of getting a tattoo is like getting to know your tattoo artist and like the fact that they're willing to, you know, so they check, okay, are you feeling okay? Do you want to keep going? You know, shall I keep going? They talk to you. They talk to you about your tattoo, what it means. Like there's a whole like personal experience that goes on with it, and I feel like including robots just kind of takes away from the whole thing.
Next up, laser tattoos, like the movie from Starship Troopers.
That actually doesn't sound that bad. Like I kind of like the idea of, yeah. I kind of like the idea of like the laser tattoos if it's just like an instant print kind of thing. I don't know. That just sounds cool. But like a robot doing my tattoo, forget about it. All right. It looks like we're coming up on a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to you guys a little bit about some cool cell modular robots.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
So the cell robot wants you to be able to build a modular robot. And so what this thing is so it starts at a heart, which is like a sphere. It's like a sphere, and it contains like the next necessary power and Bluetooth components. And so there are these little cells, which are these other little spheres that you connect to it, and you can create like they were doing a lot of like RC cars and that sort of thing, but you can create like robots that walk around. They even like have like a, if you watch the video, their Kickstarter video, you could even set it up to where it like had like a little scoop on it and it scooped up some dog food and dropped it in the dish.
See, and, I want a little AT-AT.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that they were also like proclaiming with it is like, so you have the little robot in your house and then you can have like a camera module on it. So that way you can watch what you're doing. So like I don't know how far the signal would have to go, but like if you're at work and you want to like check in on your house, like you were saying the other day with your repairman coming in, you'll check on your computer's camera. Same thing, just roll around the robot and just kind of check out whatever
well,
is going
if it's,
on.
If it's Wi-Fi connected, then you're good to go. The issue would be Bluetooth. There is long range Bluetooth. I've used it on my motorcycle. Usually Bluetooth has a maximum of around 30 feet. Mm-hmm. So what my thought is, it's probably a Wi-Fi thing. As long as it's within range of your Wi-Fi, that would be kind of cool. Having a little robot, you can, it's like attaching attaching a camera to your Roomba vacuum.
Right. that's hilarious. So what it is it's it's basically two rotating hemispheres that allow the robot to twist and move limbs. And so it's kind of a cool way to not only like be practical for little household things, but it's also a good way to get kids into robots and into programming. It's a lot like you remember Lego Robotics Clubs?
No, that was way after.
Okay, so when I was a kid, we had these Lego Robotics Clubs. That that you could join, and like I remember there was one the theme for our year was like space. It was like Mars themed, so you had to like you had your little core, which was like basically the brain, and you programmed it to do things. Like you programmed certain parts to do things and you built on top of it. So like some people used tracks like a tank. Other people, we just used wheels because we found that like the tracks would pull up the mat unless you had like the little sliders on it. Anyway, so like the thing was you were supposed to send the robot around and program it to do all these little objectives. And the more objectives you did on the Mars mat, the more you were able to do, the more points you got. So we, like, a lot of people would try to like get their robot to do the stuff with the most points. And so, you know, if whichever people with the team with the most points at the end won, basically. And so
Was this Lego Mindstorm?
I think so, yes.
Because
did you get to play with it at all?
No, I think I was a teenager when that came out. I don't particularly remember. I remember thinking it was a great idea, and Legos by themselves are a great tool for imagination. So I thought, you know, if you had easy program language, this would be just a great way to fuel a lot of fun playtime. So I was totally for this.
The programming was a little difficult, I think. Like, if I remember correctly, like, we spent all night trying to program it. We ended up getting it to do everything we wanted it to do, but it took a long time.
See, I'm thinking with something like this, they've had enough time to simplify programming it.
Like, they show in the video, like, you can, like, program the different parts to move the way you want it to.
See, and my thought with a lot of these things, there's probably two different modes. There's probably an easy mode and a hard mode.
There's, like, a catalog with a bunch of different build ideas. So what it gives you is, like, so you can either try to create your own thing, or you can, like, work off of these different little build modules.
Hmm.
So I think it's kind of like with...
And this is 100% Kickstarter. I don't mean to interrupt you, but this is our listeners can buy today, or...
Yeah. Well, it is on Kickstarter, and the kits start around $155. So I think if you're willing to roll the dice on this one, give it a try. It seems like it's something that could kick on, though. Like, this seems like a legitimate Kickstarter thing. I know I've kind of criticized Kickstarter stuff in the past, but this looks like something you could legitimately get into.
Well, I would say with anything, you know, with a Kickstarter or anything crowdfunded, you know, you buyer beware. But this legitimately seems really cool.
Yeah, it's especially for getting kids into robotics. It kind of reminds me a little bit about, have you seen the video for the Oscar project?
No.
It's the little, like, it's got the brain and you connect it to the heart, and then they're like the little limbs. It's like that weird organic robot thing, and it was like a hoax, but they released those videos, and it was like these really creepy organic robotic things. And I think it was a PR stunt for a short film, but this seems like a legitimate, cool modular robot.
I hope it takes off. I'd love to see the future of it. I mean, I know I've seen these so-called kits in some of the big box stores.
Yes.
But it would be cool to see something with a little bit more selectability and a little bit more user's choice instead of, hey, here's a robot, make it do what you want within the limitations of what we built into it.
Well, it definitely does seem kind of limiting. Like, I feel like the only thing you could really make this thing do is move.
I'm thinking once you give it to kids, I'm thinking they're going to find stuff that they never thought of.
Right.
You know, they basically think vehicles and this and that. How do you know some kid doesn't make some wind-up thing that moves something? And
right, some contraption that makes you breakfast.
Yeah, like a Rube Goldberg device. See, I'm thinking that's what I want to see is as soon as you give it to kids, you're going to find stuff that you never thought of.
Well, and even adults. Like, there are adults that get their hands on these little kits and do all kinds of things. I know people who build things just using robotics kits and then, like, things that you're not supposed to program it the way that they do, you know?
Oh, yeah. There's really no limitation to it. It just, you have to figure out how to make it do what you want.
Which right.
It's pretty much what being a geek is all about, is making stuff do things that, well, they weren't plain meant to do or shouldn't do.
That's why mods on Steam are the best.
Yeah.
So one of the things that's kind of cool, kind of a bit of a gimmick. I'm not sure why Pizza Hut's doing this, but Pizza Hut has a DJ pizza box now.
Goes along with KFC's Power Charge meal box.
Yeah, so a little bit of a food
gimmick.
Yeah, definitely a gimmick. So what it does is it uses printed electronics so that DJs can crossfade, rewind, and even scratch. The box pairs up with smartphones, computers using Bluetooth, and works with some DJ software. Now, I've watched the video for this, and it shows a guy doing his DJ stuff and, like, mixing things and fading one, you know, one track out with another and in with another and doing the scratch pad and that sort of thing. I don't know, though, because these kind of videos are really easy to mimic. Oh, what yeah. I'll have to do is I'll have to go and watch like people review it. So some 12-year-old will tell me why it sucks on YouTube. So I guess it's, you know, it's not necessarily a set of true physical turntables, but it's pretty close. And the idea to me, this comes in a pizza box. Well, Pizza Hut pizza isn't exactly the best pizza. It's a little greasy. So I'm imagining these boxes are going to be covered in grease, and you're not going to want to be a DJ with your fingers and all that grossness.
I still think this is cool, though. I mean, I love creative gimmicks, and this is probably one of the most creative gimmicks I've heard about in a long time that makes me want to see it. I mean, if their goal is to get somebody to at least buy Pizza Hut pizza, if there was actually one that was even close to me, I'd try it just to get the box.
Well, there is one here in Sacramento. So, I mean, while you're walking around, you might want to, you know.
Too bad. I guarantee I live in the complete opposite direction of said place.
Oh, you definitely do.
I live in the middle of nowhere.
But I guess it's kind of cool. I guess the company Margarita Mixes, they do a lot of music reviews. Wait. They gave it a 3 out of 5.
Margarita Mix is an actual name of a company or a website?
It's a website, and they do like reviews for like music software and DJ software.
That's a great name. I'm really impressed. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're coming up on a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about something interesting. Everybody's favorite electric car company, Tesla, just made an offer to acquire SolarCity, maker of solar panels.
Are you looking for the very best NFL and college football podcast? Then check out the GSMC Football Podcast. Get the latest football news, both on and off the field. From the NFL draft to trades to the rumor mill to the NFL combines, they got you covered. That's gsmcpodcast.com/football-podcast. Get updates on college rivalries, game day insights, and much, much more. It's football talk the way you want it. This show eats, sleeps, and breathes football. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
And we're just going to jump straight into the story. Well, this makes perfect sense to me. Tesla being a clean energy company started by Elon Musk, if I'm not mistaken. This is a perfect marriage made in heaven. Tesla requires energy. Why not use energy that's not made by fossil fuels? Now, Tesla's mission has always been tied to sustainability. They said they seek to accelerate the world's transition to sustainable transportation by offering increasing and affordable electric vehicles. I think their cheapest vehicle is $100,000. And in March 2015, they launched Tesla Energy, which through the Powerwall and PowerPack all allows homeowners and businesses to utilize the benefits from renewable energy storage. That being said, I remember reading something that there's an increasing order of magnitude where a good portion of the power is slowly moving away from fossil fuels and natural gas into solar panels. I know where I live, my parents have a fairly big solar field.
You know, it's really interesting because I know California has been doing a lot of testing with solar panels. I know like a lot of you can get solar powers to be installed for really inexpensively just because they want to try making them more available to the public.
And now that they're cheaper and like you said, with new different ways to do it, and with California being almost sun 360 days out of the year, it's not always, but there's always some sort of light.
Well, yeah. I mean, like if you're in the summer, there's no clouds ever.
So this is honestly for areas like this and Texas and other places that have a lot of sunlight. It's just a great idea. I mean,
would be really good for Nevada too.
Oh yeah, I mean, if I had a house, I would totally look into it. And see, with a car, this is perfect. Imagine a Tesla car with the SolarCity solar panel somehow mounted to it.
Yeah,
I'm really jazzed. I love solar power. Now, Tesla said, and I quote, "We would be the world's only vertically integrated energy company offering end-to-end clean energy products to our customers. This would start with a car you drive and energy that you use to charge it. And would extend to how everything else in your home or business is powered. With your Model S, X, or Model 3, your solar panel system and your Powerwall all in place, you'll be able to deploy energy, consume energy in the most efficient, sustainable way possible, lowering your costs and minimizing your dependency on fossil fuels and the grid.
Now, Tesla has always been one of those companies that's been trying to be an innovator in technology, especially with cars. And I think this is kind of cool. Like, I think it's kind of cool that Tesla is always trying to move things forward. You know, it's like they say, if you're not working for Tesla, you're working for Apple, right?
Pretty much. And I heard recently they just cleared the antitrust panel on everything. So it's just a matter of time. Now, I have to apologize. I didn't look too deeply into what I'm about to say, but I have heard that Elon Musk either started SolarCity or somehow involved in it. So this is something that Elon Musk at least has some personal information about and probably thought it was the best marriage made far as the technologies combined.
Right. Well, and they're not afraid to move things forward. I know like a lot of other auto companies are like, nah, let's stick with fossil fuels and aren't really trying to progress. And I feel like Tesla is like the one few example of a company trying to, okay, we can't use fossil fuels anymore. We'll find something else for you then.
Now, I do want to talk a little bit of the dark side of electric vehicles, and this is not something I've heard a lot of conversations about, is one of the major drawbacks of electric cars is the batteries. What do you do with them? Now, Tesla and other companies have trying to spend millions and probably billions of dollars inventing batteries that, A, that are greener, and two, that hold charge for longer. The best example of that would be, imagine your cell phone. Now, every battery has a fixed number of charge and drain cycles. The more you do that, the less charge they have. I have a friend whose 4S, for example, would probably last half the day, and that's without using it.
Wow.
So that's going to happen. Now, if you want to talk about some cars like the Toyota Prius, those batteries are anywhere between $5,000 to $10,000, and now thieves are targeting those batteries.
Really? And I didn't know that was a thing.
I read about it recently, enough that it kind of was like, wow, why didn't I hear about this before?
Right.
And this is like people in California were required to have catalytic converters. And California's version of catalytic converters have platinum in it. It's not uncommon to, in certain areas, to start your car, and it sounds weird because somebody stole your catalytic converter. And people always need batteries for your smart car, for your car, so it makes sense.
Right.
So the question would be is, what's the cost to entry on these batteries? Are you going to spend $5,000, $10,000, $30,000? I think as soon as batteries get cheaper, I think it's going to take off.
And it's only a matter of time before batteries do get cheaper.
I know. For me, do you buy new cars?
I usually stick with used.
See, that's with me. And I buy anywhere between 2 to 4 years if I can help it. I'm not going to buy a four-year-old hybrid.
Right.
It just, the barrier to entry to me, it just isn't there because how well does the battery work? Am I going to end up wasting more money because now I've got a gasoline car with two bunch of heavy batteries?
Have you used a hybrid though?
I haven't. Now, back in the early to mid 90s, my dad had a test vehicle made by Honda and this was 100% electric.
Right.
Matter of fact, after the test, all these vehicles got destroyed.
Really?
And it was amazing. Now, this car had about 100 miles. Mm-hmm. It required 210 energy and a special charger. But it was amazing. I love the idea of electric vehicles. It is kind of disturbing to be in a car and not hear anything, though.
Right. Well, I have a friend who has an electric vehicle, and she loves it when the big problem that she has is just like finding a place to charge them. Because there are some places that like some parking lots have electric charger. You know, electric car chargers, but it's not integrated in a lot of places yet.
And the other question is there's a lot of people that park there because there's no other parking.
Right. That's another thing. But then I know like with a hybrid, though, it uses less of the battery than you'd think.
Now, a lot of the hybrids I know of are gasoline-powered engines with batteries. I think eventually it's going to become the other way around where it's an electric vehicle with an engine.
Yeah.
Which personally I think is the best way to go around it, because then you have the gasoline engine solely to charge the electric drive.
Well, see, because that's what they do. What it does is you're driving, and then your front wheels are collecting the energy from the rotations.
I know that's what the Prius also works on, I think, when you brake, too.
Yes. Well, I know, like, my buddy who owns a Prius, he, like, brakes as rarely as he possibly can. Like, he rarely uses the gas, and he rarely brakes just so that way he can keep the charge going and use less gas.
Is he a hypermiler?
I guess you could say, is that the term for it?
Like a hypermiler is a guy, like, when you stop at the stoplight, you turn off your car, you just do as many things as you can to save you gas mileage. Like, you don't want to rabbit start. Like, you don't want to floor it. You slowly go up to speed because it wastes less gas. Stuff like that.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those.
There's an episode of Mythbusters out there that kind of explains it. And it's been around for a while. Some of these people hack their cars and stuff.
Well, there's even, like, I remember hearing about people who would, like, drive right behind semi-trucks because apparently the airflow is supposed to carry your car better.
The best example of this is NASCAR. Now, it's called drafting, if I remember correctly. What it is the car in front of you is using more power and more fuel because it has to go through the wind. Now, if you stay behind them at a very close distance, their airflow goes over you. So you're actually using less fuel by using them.
Now, don't actually do that, because if they halt to a stop, you're screwed.
Yeah. Now, NASCAR does it at 200 and something miles an hour on drivers who are trained to do this. No offense. You, myself, and Shay aren't really trained to do that. And doing that on any freeway near us is going to get you killed.
Yeah, in more ways than one. If you don't get killed by the initial crash, the guy in the car in front of you is going to kill you.
Yes. So this is a really exciting future. Have you seen the movie Demolition Man?
Oh, man, I love Demolition Man.
I'm waiting for a future like that. Like, not the overarching story, but with the cars. Like, with smart electric vehicles that use some sort of capacitance gel. That's what they used in that movie universe.
I want the seashells, man. I want to know how the seashells work.
Could we just skip that part of the conversation? I mean... I'm really looking forward to getting off of fossil fuels. Now, I don't know if Shay shares my viewpoint when it comes to green. Is most people I know when it comes to green technology don't want it to be an inconvenience. I know very few people who are going to go way out of their way to be green, like these people who have those cars that burn alternative fuels.
Right. Diesel engines mostly do that.
Yeah. So if they can find a way to have a car become cleaner, energy to become cleaner, I'm going to do it because it's efficient and it doesn't ruin. I don't have to go out of my way for it.
Right.
And I think as soon as that happens, and I think Tesla is on the bleeding edge of it, I think it's going to change the world.
Yeah. No, I'm really excited to see what Tesla is going to do. Tesla is one of those companies that I love to follow because they're on the edge.
And now I don't see them everywhere, but they're starting to be more common because it's really cool to go, hey, that was a Tesla.
I don't think I've ever actually seen a Tesla on the road. And I didn't notice.
I've seen at least three or four of them, which always surprises me every time. It's like the few times I've parked next to like a Lamborghini, you know, like the $400,000 ones. And you're going, wow, that exhaust pipes is more than my car. But with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to do us a favor. I want you to go to gmcpodcast.com. That's gsmcpodcast.com. Click on the technology section and subscribe. You can find us anywhere on the interwebs. The other thing I want you to do is go to facebook.com. Type in GSMC Technology Podcast. This is episode 28. If you have a story you'd like us to talk about, if you have any comments or questions, we do follow our Facebook page and are there quite regularly. There are things you can also find us on Twitter. And for Jonathan Charney
and Shane Orpik,
as always, thank you for listening.